The Taishriven Chronicles by Richard Fife. Chapter 14. A Soldier's Deal. Brian stared into the cold hearth, glad to be left alone. Not that he was alone in the physical sense. Members of Nikki's gang moved in and out of their hideout throughout the day, but they let him be on the couch. At times, he could feel their eyes on him, but they never talked to him, and so for that part, he was alone. Nor had he been left alone in his thoughts entirely. Gavriel and Vlad had both tried to talk to him in their own idiosyncratic ways, Gavriel with all the tenderness of a bear, and Vlad with the raving of a mad drunk. Brian had barely spoken to either, and they had given up. Surprisingly, after she had finally been found, Margot tried to talk to him as well. She forgave him for the satchel incident, offered to listen if he needed to talk, then ended with a threat to his manhood if he did not step out of it. Perhaps it was his lack of response to the threat, or perhaps she had just run out of ways to try and coax a reaction out of him. Regardless, she left too. Surprisingly, Gust came over and sat next to him at one point as well. The man only mumbled something in Krellin, then they both sat, staring into the empty hearth. It felt almost comforting, having someone sitting there but not trying to talk to him. Almost. But not quite. After perhaps a half hour, Gus nodded and went about whatever other business he had as well. Gavriel made a point of forcing Brian to the table to eat, but he only picked at his food and offered as little conversation as he could. His thoughts were not the kind to be shared, and when the others had finished, Brian stood up from his mostly untouched meal and returned to his seat on the sofa. He had only noted in passing as Gavriel, Vlad, and Marcus left to whatever errand they had come up with over dinner. He felt the couch shift to his right as someone sat down next to him, but he did not look up. He honestly did not care if Praydon himself was sitting down right now, and because of this, he was caught completely off guard by the voice that spoke. "Didn't eat." He looked over at Cook. The bony woman was staring into the hearth and sucking on her teeth. "I wasn't very hungry." "Haven't eaten much at all," she said. "Haven't been hungry at all," he said. She snorted. "Been too busy feeling sorry for yourself is what you've been." He narrowed his eyes. In all the years he had known Cook, she had never said this many words together. "What?" "You take care of people," she said. "That's what you do. The urchins, your gang, Kira. But who takes care of you?" "I'll tell you who. Cook does. And now that the fire is damped, time to be about it." "Thank you for the offer." He hesitated. He was about to call her by her real name, but it suddenly occurred to him that he did not know it. He just barreled on. "I can look after myself." "Trona wearing a skirt, boy," she said. "I think I know the look of a man who needs some sense beaten into him." "I have plenty enough sense," he said. "I'm not exactly new to this game, and..." She made a guttural sound in her throat that was halfway between a laugh and a cough. "I've been in this longer than you, boy. I remember the day old Dally brought you in, all wide-eyed and thinking you were more clever than you were." He looked back at the fireplace, unwilling to meet her gaze. He had somehow forgotten Cook had been an ancient fixture of the hole well before him. The immutable nature of the woman tended to make one overlook her. "Now look at you, too clever by half, and not even using it." She reached over and smacked him on the back of his head. "Stop wasting our time and figure out how to save that girl. I rather like her." He rubbed the back of his head and looked back to the woman, but she was already on her feet and moving back to the kitchen. He looked after her for a moment, then turned his eyes back to the hearth. The last day, he had been in a stupor, staring at the fireplace. Any thoughts he had were those of a man in shock. Now, his mind raced. Kira needed his help. The bell rang above the mantel, and Brian glanced back at the stairwell. A part of him reached for the gun that was not there, another cursed at him for not having one on him, and a third realized this was the first time all day the bell had rung that he had reacted to it. Across the room, two of Nikki's men had their hands casually in their coats, but they pulled them out empty when they saw who was on the stairs. Gavriel burst into the room and immediately looked at Brian. He stopped, confused, when he saw Brian looking back at him, then turned around to the other two men. "We have a guest," he said. We blindfolded him most of the way here, so he doesn't know the location, and he's trustworthy enough besides. The men nodded, and Gavriel called down the stairs for Vlad and Marcus to bring up the guest before walking over to Brian. He looked Brian in the eyes and furrowed his brow. "You all right?"
"I've been better," Brian said.
"What happened?"
"I had some sense knocked into me." Brian looked over to where a squat hooded man was being helped up the stairs by Vlad.
What's this about?" Nikki stormed out of her office, and Margot was close behind her.
"A guest? You're pushing the limits of my hospitality, Thrust."
"Let's find out who it is first," Brian said. Nikki blinked and looked at Brian.
"Fine."
Gavriel nodded back to Vlad, who pulled the hood off. Jason blinked and looked around the room and focused on Brian.
"Well, you don't look as bad as they described."
"They probably weren't exaggerating," Brian said, "considering what I was like when they left. But that doesn't have much to do with the price of sand. Why are you here, Jason?"
Jason nodded slightly. "Your boys told me about what happened, and I think I can help."
"We could definitely use some help," Brian said. "What do you have in mind?"
"Well, Marcus here needs fixed and in a hurry," Jason said.
"I could do it, but I need those documents you handed over to the rebels, and I doubt they're going to give them back, or even let me look at them, for free."
"They don't need the money," Brian said. "If anything, we'd have to trade them something of equal value."
Jason smiled and patted a satchel at his side.
"I have something they'll want."
"And what will that cost us?" Brian said.
Jason's smile broadened.
"Ever the businessman, but I can't blame you. Not money, I don't need it either. But I'll accept the promise of a favor. Can't say it isn't appealing, having a gang in debt to you."
"Marcus will be in debt to you," Gavriel said. "I don't see how this helps me."
Jason turned. "Because without Marcus, I doubt you'll be able to get Kira back from wherever it is that she's been spirited away. Fixing him helps the entire gang."
"Why not just take Marcus to the rebels?" Vlad said. "I've heard Lector Sinnott is a pretty smart fellow, and he has the schematics already."
"No," Brian said. "I don't trust Lector. In fact, if we go there, Marcus won't be coming with us. It will be Gavriel, myself, and Jason that go."
"So you're accepting my offer?" Jason said.
"The more you help us, the bigger that favor will be," Brian said. "I can trust your motivation."
"Then what am I supposed to do?" Marcus said.
Brian looked up at the ceiling and closed his eyes.
What indeed?
Fortunately, the past day had not been completely wasted, but they still were not any closer to knowing what had happened to Kira. What Brian needed now was information.
"Marcus, you think you can find that lieutenant friend of yours?" Brian said.
Marcus grimaced.
"I don't think she'll be much help, Brian. She has a bit of a thing against criminals in a violent way, if you get my drift. The only reason she tolerates me is because I'm ex-military."
"Could you find her?"
He sighed.
"Probably."
"Good. Take Vlad and Margot with you for backup." Brian looked to the other two to make sure they were not going to try and speak up. "See if she knows what happened."
"I don't need backup," Marcus said.
"You just said she's violent towards our kind," Brian said. "For all we know, she was involved in this. In which case, I want you to capture her. Margot can take you someplace safe to put her so we can question her."
"Whoa now," Marcus said.
"I don't think she was involved with..." Brian cut him off with a gesture.
"She's in the military, and if I recall correctly, her superior officer is Captain Roger Harris." He gave Marcus a meaningful look, and Marcus nodded curtly.
"Roger is who I suspect betrayed me. Thus this lieutenant could have been part of it."
"Wait, you sure it's Roger?" Jason said. Brian looked at him.
"Fairly.
Why, you know him?"
"He's my kid brother," Jason said. "Don't go thinking I can help, though. He hates me, and the feeling is mutual. We haven't even talked in years."
"She hates him, too," Marcus said.
"Then she'll be all the more willing to betray him," Brian said. "Go find out what you can."
Marcus looked like he was about to say something more, but Vlad put a hand on his shoulder. He turned around, and the strange foreign man shook his head and gestured back to the stairwell. Margot joined them at the head of the stairs, and they left.
Gavriel turned to Brian.
"Should we bring Gus, too?"
Brian shook his head.
"Have him follow them at a distance, just to keep a wary eye."
"Little paranoid," Gavriel said.
Brian turned to him.
So, have you started trusting Marcus this last day?
Gavriel frowned, then nodded. A few moments later, after Gavriel had spoken in what broken Krellin he knew, Gus nodded and headed out after Marcus.
Gavriel then looked from Brian to Jason.
Shall we?
You two go on ahead, Nikki said. I want to talk to Brian. It won't take but a moment.
The two men looked at Brian, and he nodded and shooed them off.
When they were gone, he turned to Nikki.
Yes?
You all right, hon?
I just had my hideout destroyed, my trust betrayed, and a woman I look on as a daughter kidnapped, he said.
Do you think I'm all right?
You looked all right considering a half hour ago, Nikki said.
You know, back when you were a drooling fool on my couch. But this passion you have now...
Are you sure you're all right?
Time's wasting, Brian said. I don't have the luxury of being all right. The fates have conspired against me, but I will not let them win. Not this time, not any time.
Nikki sighed. Remember that job we pulled together? Tresling Gardens?
One of the most successful heists I've ever been a part of, Brian said.
Also one of the most poorly put together, Nikki said.
There was more improvisation and slipshod work than two bands of rookies could have done.
What's your point?
The only reason we pulled that off is because we kept level heads, she said. You most of all. This business you're in, it might turn into something like that, and they're going to need you calm and on your game. Can you do that?
Brian clenched a fist, then relaxed and took a sigh.
I don't know. My blood is boiling over this, Nikki. Yours would be too.
Never said it wouldn't be, she said.
If someone took Cass, I'd tear the city apart to get her back, and you know it. And if I actually tried, I'd just end up in irons, the same as you will, if you don't take the time to be careful about this.
He frowned but nodded.
I'll keep that in mind. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have some documents to go procure.
The downtown flats rose before them, and Brian shook his head.
I don't like it.
Going belly up on me, Brian? Gavriel said.
Hardly, Brian said. But these are not the kind of men you just barge in on and offer deals to. They think they are the rightful rulers of Sintat in their own deluded view of things. If we do not treat them like the kings they think they are, this could end very poorly for us.
They're rebels and they know it, Gavriel said. They should be happy to get any attention at all.
Brian is right, Jason said. I know Lecter, and he might not be much of one for politics, but he is every inch the high meister that Tesme is.
More so for thinking his fall from power was unlawful. Gavriel sucked on his teeth.
Was it?
Shady, but legal, Jason said. I was one of the arbiters in the decision.
Were you now? Gavriel said.
He isn't going to be happy to see you then, is he?
I merely interpreted the bylaws, Jason said. I didn't cast a vote to throw him out or keep him in. And one vote wouldn't have mattered much anyway. Tesme won his seat by a rather healthy margin.
Regardless of the history of it, Brian said, Lecter feels jilted by what happened and was rather adamant when I met him that he was the rightful High Meister. Antagonizing that will not help us. Understand, Gavriel?
Don't step on the toes of the man who thinks the world is out to get him, Gavriel said.
I think I can do that.
Something in Gabriel's tone caught Brian's ear, as if he meant more than what he said, but he cast the thoughts away as foolish. That Gabriel was able to grasp the concept was fairly impressive for the man. He was good at executing plans, but the finer points of the thought often seemed to be lost on him.
Just follow my lead.
Brian took a deep breath and walked up the steps and into the building. The same old man was sitting behind the desk at the front, and he looked up at Brian with a mild disregard and disgust.
Yes, he said.
I would like to speak with Mr. Jenkin, Brian said.
Or, barring that, the High Meister.
The man's expression never wavered.
Who?
Brian fought down an exasperated sigh. He had hoped the man would not play difficult, but such was a fool's wish. I have a business proposition that I think would interest them greatly.
I'm afraid that I don't know what you are talking about, the man said.
Good day, sirs.
Might you point me in a direction that I might inquire further? Brian said.
The man only looked at Brian, reminding him of nothing short of a frog. The expression was clear. They had been dismissed, and he was waiting for them to accept it. Jason cleared his throat. "Might you deliver a missive to the Orange Room?" The man turned slowly to Jason with a look that was half annoyance and half uncertainty. "Perhaps." Jason reached into his pouch and pulled out a small, clean piece of paper and a strange pen. He scrawled something quickly that did not even appear to be Centashin, then folded the paper and handed it to the man. "Do you wish to seal it?" the man asked. "My messages guard themselves without want of wax," Jason said. "The rightful recipient will know what it says." The man frowned and made a show of opening the letter and looking it over, as if he could read it. He then frowned and refolded the paper. "Wait here." He moved down the corridor, and once he was out of earshot, Jason looked at Brian. "I thought you knew how to deal with these people." "I've only met them once," Brian said, "and they had summoned me rather specifically. They did not exactly instruct me in the proper procedures in contacting them if I had need." "Because you shouldn't have need," Jason said. "You are merely a hired gun to them, not even someone worthy of note as having a business relationship with. At least, not one they want to admit to."
"And how do you know how to get in?" Gabriel said. Jason narrowed his eyes. "I think that should be rather obvious."
"You're the spy," Brian said. "The one that betrayed those documents to Lecter."
"I'd hardly call myself a spy," Jason said. "I'm just a man who fixes generators and has to make his way in this horrid city."
"Why?" Brian said. "Why help Lecter, if you didn't vote one way or the other, and you paved the way for his removal?"
"I keep my options open," Jason said. "I didn't vote so that I wouldn't be on the wrong side of whoever won. I'm only a middle-ranked Meister, after all. I have to be mindful of my betters."
"And you do that by betraying the High Meister?" Gabriel said. "A man who rises to power quickly often falls just as fast," Jason said. "Tesma will likely be gone just as quickly as he came. But Lecter, that man worked and scraped his way up the ranks and earned his title. I don't think he would lose it quite so easily." The sound of footsteps came from the hallway, and the three of them quieted down as the doorman returned. His face was unreadable, and he sat down behind the desk and handed a note back to Jason. It was covered by even more of the strange script, and Jason looked it over for a while and scratched his short goatee in thought. After a moment, he looked back up at the man. "Marbury." The man frowned. "Correct. This way, please." They were led down a narrow corridor, and the doorman knocked on and opened a door seemingly at random. One thing was for sure, it was a different door than Brian had been led to last time. Brian pitched his voice only so Gabriel could hear him. "Be mindful of what you see." Inside, Lecter was pacing in front of a cold fireplace, a shock rod at his side and a bracer devoid of sigil on his left arm. He glanced up at them and frowned when he saw Brian. His expression did not change when it shifted to Jason.
"And just what are you doing here?" Lecter said.
"We're here to make a deal," Brian said. "One we think you might be rather eager to make." Lecter glanced at Brian. "I wasn't talking to you."
"He has the right of it," Jason said. "I want to see those papers you got a bit back, and I've brought something in trade."
"I'm your rightful High Meister, Herrs," Lecter said. "A soldier does not make deals with his general, and you do not make deals with me."
"A soldier makes deals when he has two generals that are fighting each other," Jason said. "A general makes deals with soldiers when he is not in a position to give orders."
Lecter narrowed his eyes. "You tread a perilous path, Meister Herrs."
"Here now," a voice said from the next room. "What's this about?"
Mikhail Jenkin walked in and looked at each person in turn. "The fight is out in the streets, gentlemen, not in my parlor."
"Just a case of insubordination, Mikhail," Lecter said. "This Meister here is trying to sell me something that is rightfully mine."
"Trade, actually," Jason said.
"Yes, yes," Mikhail said. "I heard you. You're loud enough to wake the dead in here. Lecter, while I back your case, please remember the reality of the situation. Now, Meister Herrs, what is it you wish to offer in trade?"
Lecter frowned, but Jason seemed to not notice.
"I have brought some documentation that I think the High Meister might find interesting.
He pulled out a bundle of papers from his satchel. I have here detailed schematics and documentation of Tesma's power grid. Mikhail made a polite grunt, as if he understood what Jason had said. For all Brian knew, he did. But he somehow doubted it, especially with the way Lecter's eyes widened with hunger.
Give them to me now, Lecter said.
That is a direct order from your High Meister. The legal High Meister has given me no such order, Jason said. But for the man I think is more rightful to the office, I would be willing to part with these in exchange for the notes on revenants that came up from Adderven.
Never, Lecter said.
Mikhail made a shushing motion. And why might you want those, Meister Harris?
Why do you bloody want them? Gavriel said. A butcher doesn't ask a cook what she plans on making with the meat. Do we have business or not?
Lecter glowered, but then seemed to notice Gavriel for the first time. His face became a sudden blank slate, and he had the appearance of a man deep in thought. Jason winced, and Brian probably looked the same. From what he heard of these people, such an outburst could land them in the street, if not dead in the gutter. But Mikhail only looked at Gavriel for a moment, then laughed.
Well put, he said. And you are?
Gavriel thrust.
I'll remember you, Gavriel, Mikhail said.
But fair enough. So, Lecter, are we interested in these documents?
They could be of passing use, Lecter said.
You could sabotage the power grid at your leisure, Jason said. Much of the Garden District and some of the factories are coming to rely on that grid, and you could also tap into it unnoticed.
You assume that we haven't already, Lecter said.
I know you haven't, Jason said. I'm the master of the mill house. I'd know if anyone was on the grid that wasn't supposed to be.
Mikhail furrowed his brow.
But you just said... My blind eye is part of the deal, Jason said. I think those revenant documents are a fair trade. It isn't like you haven't copied them already.
Like I'd trust my copy when there might be a transcription error, Lecter said. I'll sell you a copy.
If you won't trust them, why should we? Brian said.
How do we know you don't have a copy with mistakes purposely in it that you planned on leaking back to the Meister's Guild anyway?
You're accusing me of trying to fudge a deal, boy? Lecter said.
Just thinking about what I would do, Brian said. We want the originals.
Lecter frowned and looked down into the cold hearth. While he stood there, the door to the hall opened and Eric Spears walked in. He looked around the room.
What's this, then?
Mikhail put an arm around Eric's shoulders and took him to the corner where he whispered into the shorter man's ear. Mikhail was mid-sentence when Eric spun around and brandished his hook hand at Jason.
Never! We need those notes!
Calm down, Eric, Lecter said. Those notes alone won't get you a new hand. They are informative, but that is about all. Without a Meister actually trained in the secret of silver, I won't be able to make you a revenant.
Eric's face burned red.
Be mindful of your tongue, peasant, and the filthy accusations that play on it.
Lecter looked at Eric with disinterest. Save it for the priests and courtesans.
He then turned to Jason. The originals for these documents on the grid and the blind eye. I also want to see the revenant.
Beg your pardon, Jason said.
Don't think me simple, Jason. Remember who it was that trained you. The notes from Adderven won't let you make a revenant, but they would be quite useful in fixing one.
Lecter turned to Brian.
I'm sorry, but I don't think I caught your name last time. I was rather distracted by the papers.
Brian.
Saltine, Lecter said. I've heard of your gang. Interesting rumors.
I want to see him.
No, Gavriel said. That isn't part of the deal, and it won't be.
Lecter shrugged.
What if we got you the schematics for a shock shield? Gavriel said.
Jason glared at the large man, and Lecter laughed.
I don't need any of Tesma's inferior toys, thank you. It is the revenant I am interested in.
Brian looked over at Gavriel in shock, then turned back to Lecter.
You know our terms.
Lecter shrugged again and walked out of the room.
Mikhail made a noise in his throat, then turned to Eric. Entertain our guests for a moment, Lord Spears. I need to speak with the High Meister.
Before Mikhail could cross the room, Lecter returned with a satchel.
The Meister smiled and put it on a table.
The originals in exchange for your papers on the grid and a blind eye.
Just like that, Brian said.
I had a feeling you'd deny me to look at the revenant, but I had to ask.
No, though, I will see him, one way or the other.
Lecter took a step back from the table and rested a hand on the hilt of his shock rod. Jason stepped forward and switched the satchels. It is so reassuring to see grown men able to conduct business in a mature manner, Mikhail said. Was there anything else? No, that'll be the short of it, Brian said. Thank you. Mikhail showed them to the door and closed it behind them, leaving them alone in the hall. They showed themselves out, and in the street, Brian turned to Gavriel. What was that about? He said. I would have expected you to sell Marcus out in a heartbeat. I may not trust him, Gavriel said, but no man deserves to be treated like some oddity to be taken apart and examined. It isn't right. Brian laughed. One of these days, my friend, I will figure out your strange sense of propriety. His mirth died. But what do you think? Was it him? Gavriel looked back over his shoulder and shrugged. Could be. Right build, but I've only seen that shock shield bastard once, remember. He was awfully sure he'd be able to get a look at Marcus, though. And he wasn't interested in the shock shield, Brian said. That could mean he doesn't think they have a chance in hell of working, Jason said. Could mean he has a working one already, Brian said. Either way, let's get back to the aviary. You have some documents to study. Marcus looked around the nearly empty church before he eased himself into the pew next to Megan. She tensed slightly as he sat down, then relaxed, all without raising her head from prayer. He relaxed as well. He might have vehemently demanded that Margot and Vlad stay outside, but what Brian had said was still in his mind. Megan could have been part of the raid. She might have gladly taken part in it. Was she relaxed because she trusted him? Or was it because she was here to catch him, and was glad he had fallen into the trap? Hello, Marcus, she said. It's been a while. I suppose it has, he said. I was worried that our last meeting had scared you off. I'd be a liar if I said I didn't have my doubts, he said. But what you did was justice. I cannot argue that. Then there was the fire, she said. The fire? Don't be coy. She looked up at him. You lived across the street, did you not? In a building that is now an empty shell of charred timber? He looked at her, trying to tell if she was trying to bait him or if she was just innocently inquiring. Of course she knew he lived across the way, and it would be an innocent enough question to ask. What? She said. Can't walk across your grave? He took a deep breath. Tell me honestly, Megan, were you involved in that 2 nights ago? She furrowed her brow. What? 2 nights ago, constables and military raided a thieving gang's hideout, he said. Most of the gang escaped, and the next thing you know, an entire city block is on fire. She narrowed her eyes. What are you accusing me of? Her tone was so genuinely insulted that he sighed in relief. Nothing. Thankfully, nothing. She scooted away from him a bit and looked at him more fully. You aren't making any sense, Marcus. Military working with the constables, let alone to raid a gang's hideout? Where to begin, he said. I'll get straight to the point. The constables raided my home, and hidden among the ranks were 2 soldiers. Our leader is convinced that your commander, Captain Harris, is behind it. Megan tapped her lip. Your boss, is he middle-aged, with sandy hair, somewhat on the lean side? Marcus narrowed his eyes. That'd be him. He visited Harris a while back, she said. Had me pull a file. Your file, Sergeant McGregor. Harris and this man seemed to get on rather well. Now you are telling me they don't? Harris wasn't after my boss, Marcus said. Then you? No. A girl that was in our gang, Marcus said. Kira Johns. Blonde, a little shorter than you, marked with the Nautilus. And why would he be after her? She asked. He shook his head. We don't know. I was hoping you might. They took her, Megan, and I have a feeling it has nothing to do with any crime she ever committed. The constables don't have her. She sighed and stood. My break is almost over, Marcus. I need to head back. He stood as well. Please, try and find out what happened to her. Her lips pressed into a thin line. I'll see what I can do. She gestured for him to move, and he hobbled out of the way so she could get to the aisle. He stumbled as he moved, though, and had to catch himself on the back of the next pew. She rushed up to catch him. Are you all right? He waved off her outstretched arm. I'll live.
"You're hurt," she said. "What happened?" "I'll be fine. I was only shot." He regretted the words the moment they came out of his mouth. He looked up to see her eyes wide. "Only shot?" she said. "In your leg?" "It wasn't anything serious," he said. "I've already had it looked after." "You shouldn't be up on it," she said. "You don't even have a crutch." He left it outside, hoping to avoid this conversation. "I said it isn't that bad. A graze at worst. It just stings a little sometimes. And it catches me off guard. See, I'm fine now." He took a few tentative steps and ignored the weakness as best he could. Fortunately, there was no pain for him to have to grimace against. Megan eyed him skeptically, but nodded slowly and started for the door. "I'll see if I can find out what happened to your friend," she said. "Or..." She cut off as Marcus took another step and again stumbled. He still caught himself, but the sound of gears grinding and straining echoed through the cathedral. Megan eyed him in confusion, and then understanding dawned on her face. She took several steps back and put a hand on her pistol. "You..." "Megan," he said, "please, just hold on a moment."
You're a revenant?"
Her voice was filled with a plea for him to deny it, but also with an understanding that he could not. He stood tall, although he still had to steady himself on a nearby pew.
"Yes."
"You hid this from me?" she said.
"What was I supposed to do?"
Her lip pulled back into a snarl.
"Die like you should have? Who are you, some Adervinian spy?"
"I'm Centashin," he said. "Born and raised here, in Uptown. And I'm no traitor. I swear to Trona above on that, Megan."
"But you're a revenant!"
A tear slid down her cheek, and her voice was rough.
"It was not my choice," he said. "I had to make a soldier's deal."
She shook her head and took several more steps back.
"You're a monster, choice or no. How can you stand to even keep breathing?"
"I had this done to me," he said, "and I endure it because it was what I had to do. I'm making the best of a hard lot, Megan. You know something of that, don't you?"
"Don't you dare compare yourself to me!"
She turned to leave. "We do what we must to survive," he called after her. "That's what Father Morgan told me, and I'm sure he's told you too." She stopped and half glanced over her shoulder. A moment later, she kept walking, and then she was gone.